Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This week, I'm joined by Matt Middendorp, Director of ESOP Consulting at Vision Point Capital. Matt is a seasoned entrepreneur and award-winning former banker who fell in love with employee ownership early in his career while working inside an ESOP-owned company. Today, he helps founders understand if an ESOP is the right path for succession and culture and legacy. He's also a frequent industry speaker and a writer who makes complex topics clear for owners like us. I'm excited to dig into practical steps for ESOPs for architects. Matt Middendorp, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Welcome, Mark. I think I'm just going to steal that intro going forward for any speaking engagements that I do. That sounds pretty good. I'm going to run with that.
All right, no problem. I'll send it to you. I'm looking forward to this. This is a topic that our audience often talks about. We talk about building a legacy, sort of trying to build a firm that lasts beyond us. And often in that conversation of legacy firms, ESOPs are a question. What are they? How do they work?
Yeah.
So that's the conversation that I'd like to have today.
Perfect.
Before we do that, I want to know about you and your origin story. When did you discover your passion for what you do, and who or what inspired you to get started?
Gosh, how much time do we have?
Yeah, right. As much time as you need.
No, I can actually tell a very concise story, right? So it's one of those deals that I didn't know what an ESOP was, went back to college when I was 25. And during that time, I went to school during the day, worked a second shift job. So from 3 to 11 p.m. And the company I went to go work for was a book publisher who happened to be an ESOP. And this would have been in the early 2000s, right? And being young and not really knowing anything beyond the retail and the retail management's experience that I had until that point, you immediately recognize that there's something different about an ESOP company. And at the time, I didn't attribute it to the ESOP, but you saw a group of people that were collaborating, right? You saw a group of people that were working really hard to reduce loss. You saw a group of people that were very involved in the day-to-day decisions that management was making. And by involved, I don't mean they were making the decisions. I mean, when the decisions were made, they were asking questions to make sure they understood how they could best execute it. And this was a time when the publishing industry was kind of doing a lot of this, a lot of uncertainty. And this was a company that was roaring strong through all of that. As a matter of fact, we printed children's books. So if you've ever read Where the Wild Things Are to Your Kids or Curious George or anything like that, if it was printed in the US, I might have had a hand in it if it's a 20-year-old book. So fast forward, I became a banker, right? Finished school in a couple of years, became a banker. Don't ask me how that happened. That's a conversation between me and my therapist. It's something that immediately upon becoming a banker and working in the commercial space, I had clients in my portfolio that were ESOP companies. I had actually two clients in my portfolio that converted to ESOP companies during my time. I had no influence on any of that, but I saw what happened. And I saw the companies who were already really good become great. I saw their balance sheets change. I got to really dig into the financials of pre-ESOP and post-ESOP in some cases and see the difference in the people who were selling the company and how good they felt about what they were doing and see the difference, you know, when I would go to site visits and see the employees and see how they interacted differently after the ESOP conversion. So as a banker, I saw it, but I got to admit something that as a banker, I didn't quite get, which actually plays into the next part of my story and the fact that I left banking on June 28th, 2013 at roughly 4:15 p.m.
Roughly, and, give or take give a few or minutes. Take,
right. And I started my own business, still working in the financial services space, doing consulting. And one of the things that I didn't understand, actually, you know, I'm going to actually play this in. So I had my own business for 10 years and I sold that business in the spring of 2023, actually a couple of weeks before Silicon Valley Bank collapsed. So don't ever let anybody tell you that a part of business that's about success is luck. Because absolutely, if it had been 3 weeks later, I don't know what would have happened to that transaction. I guarantee it wouldn't have gone through.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I love about what I do now, and what I do now is I educate people about employee ownership. I help them understand what it's about, how it works, the process to become one, so they can make a decision about taking the first step. And we'll talk about those steps as we go through this. But it's interesting, from a banker's point of view, I understood the financial side. As an entrepreneur myself, as somebody who built a business and put my blood, sweat, and tears in, I understood how being a business owner can consume you, right? I didn't get that as a banker, but I had to understand that. I learned that lesson. And I also understand how hard it is to transition out of it. Honestly, selling my business was probably the single most difficult decision I ever made. It took less energy to decide to get married or have kids or any of that stuff, where to go to college, than it did to, man, I did this thing. It's a part of me. How do I separate myself from this thing I built? So I believe that makes me very uniquely qualified to have these conversations with business owners, because I've been on all sides of it and I can help them triangulate what that really means for them.
Yeah. Great story. And clearly qualified to have this conversation, right? And so far, so good. Yeah. Yeah.
Give me a minute.
So let's start right at the beginning. What is an ESOP? How does it work? Who's it fit? Like, what's the 101 for ESOPs?
Okay. An ESOP at its heart is three things. Number one, it's a business transition tool. Now, I want to be really clear. When I say business transition, I'm talking strategy. It's a strategic decision that you make for yourself, right? You want to win in the process. It is a strategic decision that you make to make your business better. And it is a strategic decision that you make to help your employees who helped you be successful build wealth they would have never had otherwise. Now, I want to be really clear about one part of that, though. When I say make your own life better, I don't necessarily mean exit. There are a lot of ESOP companies, and I have some great examples where the sellers are in their early mid-40s. They're not going anywhere. They don't want to leave the business, but they want to pull liquidity out and do some other things, right? So it's a business transition tool at heart, but it's also an employee ownership vehicle. It's something that, for the first time, aligns the financial goals of a company with the financial goals of the people that work there. And do not underestimate that power, right? The average ESOP employee has a 92% greater median household wealth than a non-ESOP employee. So just let that sink in for a second, right? The idea that we have a huge retirement gap in this country, right? People that can't afford to retire, or when they retire, do not live the lifestyle they become accustomed to. Man, how about something where the employees themselves don't put a dime of their own money into it and they walk away with retirement benefits that they would have never otherwise gotten?
Yeah, interesting.
Now, they're still contributing. They may not be contributing money, but they're still contributing, right? Time, talent, expertise for the growth of the company. So it's a business transition tool. It's an employee ownership vehicle. And then the last part of it, it is a qualified retirement plan. It's actually governed by the same law that started your 401k. Again, I want to stress, unlike your 401k, there's no contribution being made by the employees themselves beyond their time, talent, and expertise. But it does give your company some pretty incredible tax benefits going forward. So at its heart, that's what an ESOP is. A business transition tool, an employee ownership vehicle, and a qualified retirement plan.
And ESOP is ESOP, is employee stock ownership.
You got it. Employee stock ownership plan. Well said. Well done.
For anybody's like, what are they talking about?
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, it's 101, right? And so I should just say, what happens in an ESOP transaction is an ESOP trust is created, and that trust purchases the company from the sellers.
Okay, interesting. All right.
And we'll talk about control and stuff in due source too, in due progress here, but.
So essentially, you establish a trust, which establishes a separate entity from the owner and the employees.
Yep.
And then the employees buy into that. Is that what you said?
So what happens then is, as the trust buys the company from the seller, that process is overseen by a trustee. Mm-hmm. To be really, really clear, that trustee does not gain a day-to-day oversight of the company. They don't want it. They don't know their company like you do. They don't want to be involved in day-to-day operations. So one of the cool parts about an ESOP is it's the only business transition tool, the only M&A activity where the seller stays in control of the company through the transaction and after. The day-to-day decision-making stays in the management and the leadership of the company as it's designated, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool. Because, I mean, if you build a company from scratch, mm-hmm. and now you want to use an ESOP for exit and transition, you can establish that and still run the company,
yep.
and do that transition at the same time. Rather than selling it and you have to skedaddle, you actually continue doing what you love,
yep.
and still have some control over it and have this transition tool.
Yep. So through that process, then the employees become beneficiary owners. Meaning they don't directly own the shares. They don't have voting rights. They don't get to hire and fire people, change the name of the company. It's beneficial to them. They're beneficial owners. So if you don't mind, let me tell you a quick story about what that looks like for a company.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I have a client, four owners that had bought this company about 20 years ago. And in this case, it's in construction with a retail aspect to it. Four owners are in their early 40s. They weren't going anywhere. They didn't want to get out. As a matter of fact, they intend to stay with the company for at least 15 more years. But they had other dreams. They had other goals. So they pulled their liquidity. In this case, they sold 100% of the company. You don't have to, but they did. And they invested in other projects. So they won, right? They got to pull the value of the company out and invest in other projects. The company is better off because of the tax benefits we mentioned earlier. And again, we'll dig into that in a little bit. Got to keep everybody on. Because that's, by the way, when we talk about the tax benefits, that's the make sure you're pulled over to the side of the road moment of this conversation. Okay. Just warn everybody right now, you're going to want to be in a safe place when we have that conversation.
We'll give you a heads up.
And what happened with the employees is the employees bought into this so much that now, and right, as business owners, we all know, we get calls from potential vendors, people trying to sell us stuff all the time. When the employees answer now, and they, hey, I'd like to talk to the owner, the employees say, you got.
Yeah.
Right? So the seller's one. The company is better off because of the tax benefits, and the employees are building wealth that they would have never otherwise had an opportunity to get to.
So you said that the owners sell, they get their sell 100%, right? So now they are selling the company for what the company's worth.
Yep.
They get paid. They continue managing the company.
And they're still running the company just like they did.
And you said that the employees benefit from that, but they're not necessarily paying or buying into that
yep.
ESOP. So where is the funding come from to pay the owners that 100%?
Sure. So when we talk about some of the things about ESOP that are a little bit, I want to say quirky, right? And this is where it's really, really important when we're having a conversation. When I sit down with a potential seller, potential business owner, when we're doing the education piece, that they understand kind of how ESOP works. And one of the things about ESOP that you would need to know in that conversation is almost every seller gets paid out over time, right? So there's almost always a component of seller financing involved.
Got it.
Now you're earning interest a percent or two above the going rate in the markets at the time. So you're getting paid for that risk that you're taking on. Bank financing is also very prevalent, probably 50-50, but bank financing versus seller financing for a lot of deals, a lot of different deals. And the other thing to understand too that I think most people don't is, well, ESOP's not an option if you're looking to do this, right? There's a transition, and very rarely in an ESOP transaction does the seller just walk away. Now they can and they do, but very rarely do they just pull back and they don't serve on the board or in any kind of governance role at all. But the other thing to consider is if you're going through a private equity transaction or a third party transaction, you don't usually get to walk away either. Right. A, you don't get paid a lump sum up. You don't get paid everything at closing. That almost never happens anymore. They make you stay on and get some kind of earnout in a private equity transaction or a third party transaction that you're never going to earn, by the way. You're never going to make it because you're not in control anymore. You don't call the shots to get to where you need to go. They do. So in the end, it's usually not a huge barrier, but it's something I would definitely want people to know about an ESOP transaction is, yes, you almost always get paid out over time. And there's almost always a component of seller financing where you're earning interest on that through that process.
So essentially, there's a loan that's taken, and the trust, I'm assuming, is taking that loan?
Technically, there's a loan between the trust and the company, and then the company and the seller.
And then over time, the owners get paid, so they get pieces of their money through time. Then how does the employees technically become owners? I understand that once you establish the ESOP, they become owners.
Yeah.
How do they benefit?
No, these are great questions, Mark. This is right on. So perfect. We should have actually rehearsed this. I'd feel better if it was on purpose, but you're crushing it. So here's what happens, right? Is one of the biggest things that you don't want to have happen is to create these shares in the ESOP and then just give them to people.
Right.
Right. Even though there's a vesting period, just like your 401k, there's a 6-year vesting period for most people. You don't want to create an unfunded liability where suddenly you've got all these shares up. So what happens then as we go through the transaction at close, we do some splits. And let's just take an example. We create 1 million shares.
Yeah.
And those shares then get allocated to the employees over 30 years. So they're getting very small amounts of those shares and those balances build up over time. Realistically, it's 10 to 15 years before you even have to really worry about, or you're planning the entire time, but it's something that you don't really spend a lot of time thinking about for at least 10 years most of the time in an ESOP company.
Yeah. So employees that, let's say they're there for 5 years, do they get a piece of that or do they get nothing until it fully vests?
Well, so when you're vested in that case, it's a 20, 40, 60, 80. So they'd be 80% vested at 5 years.
Okay.
So if they were to leave, or the exceptions are if they die or disabled or retire, then they do become 100% vested right away. But again, those balances are so small. And at year five, those balances are so small, the company's like, okay, here you go, write a check. Now, as the balances build, there are ways, and this is plan design, right? This is when you're creating the actual ESOP, you put it in just like you did your 401k. Who do I pay out and how much do I pay out and when do I pay them out? So 20 years from now, when people have real balances, you're going to have it in there that, hey, I don't have to pay them that lump sum at one time. It may be a number of years before I have to pay them, and then I pay them out over a number of years, right? So again, it's something your company plans for and prepares for that obligation that you have to those employees later. It doesn't just pop up one day.
Right. And now as we're talking, I'm understanding more on why there is a need for ESOP consulting, which is what you do. Because, I mean, it's not something you can do yourself as an owner. I mean, technically you could if you knew what you were doing.
Well, you know, I mean, the truth of it is your attorney can draft the paperwork.
Right.
Right. Your accountant can give you the value, but they can't tell you if the ESOP's going to work.
Right.
Right. They can't show you the impact on you necessarily. They can't necessarily show the impact on the company fully, because there's nuance to it, and they can't show you the impact on your employees. And those are things that we all want people to understand through something called a feasibility study before they even decide if they want to go ESOP. I always say the first step in thinking about ESOP is going, I think I want to.
Yeah.
And learning about it and having conversations with people like me who can help to take some of the things that we're talking about here that may feel complex and just lead you down a path that show you it's not complex. It's just a matter of putting it all together in one place so you can see it.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, RCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at rcat.com under the resources tab, or just go to rcat.com/arcademy. That's ARCAT.com/ARCATEMY. That's ARCAT.com/Arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. As you said, this is a transition tool. You can use it for many different ways, but it's not for everybody. And I want to talk about feasibility and a fit check. But before we do that, I want to stick to the money conversation that we're currently in. How do you actually value the company? Where's the valuation come in?
So that is part of the feasibility process. Honestly, I tell people my job is to educate and manage expectations. And one of the expectations that I manage up front is, what do you think the company's worth?
Right.
Right. So as we go through this process, we can make sure that the value the owners feel is real shows up in the study that we do, which includes that valuation analysis. Right. So one of the really cool parts about an ESOP, though, is the buyers, the trustees that oversee that trust, are buying future cash flows. Right. So it's about the things your company is doing and the projections you're making that define your success, that really, when you couple that with past performance, can drive the value of your company and the price that it ultimately sells for.
The trustee, mm-hmm. is that a third party trustee, or is that
highly recommended? The trustee has a fiduciary responsibility to serve the employees. So absolutely.
So third party, not the owner or the seller, it's somebody else.
Yep. Yep. Well, and the cool part about that is, though, is you're hiring the person you're negotiating with.
Yeah.
So one of the really neat things about an ESOP transaction is the responsibility of all parties is to sell the company or buy the company for a fair market value, right?
Yeah.
Which means that the process is very collaborative. It's not combative. And if you've ever been through an M&A process where they sit down and go through due diligence, that entire due diligence is about a baseball bat and a guy in the corner pounding it into his fist. And them going through your financials and saying, what's this? What's this? What's this? Trying to figure out how they can knock it down. In this case, it's about corroborating your story and how it's told through your numbers. And they're not there to nickel and dime you. They're there to make sure that we are getting the fair market value of the company out there. Whatever their range of values determines it to be, whatever the value we worked with you on through the feasibility process is determined to be, there's a legitimate negotiation that happens. But the responsibility of both the seller and the buyer are very, very different.
Yeah.
And the outcome that's hoped for is very, very different as well.
I can imagine that that conversation is a very early on conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
What this is worth.
Yeah, absolutely. You almost have to start there in some cases. What's your motivation? What do you want to take away from this?
A lot of expectation management happening there.
I was at a recent industry event, and by the time I was done, I was told I was an ESOP therapist.
Yeah, exactly.
Very much so.
And architects can relate to that, working with our clients who are often therapists. All right, let's talk about fit and feasibility. It's not for everybody. Who is the right fit for an ESOP?
All right, let's start with the nuts and bolts. Minimum 15 to 25 employees is pretty typical. Can we do it with fewer employees? Yes. But man, it gets tough. There's some special compliance testing that has to be done at that point. And I would just say, if you have less than 15 employees, let's have a conversation, but prepare to be disappointed.
Yeah. And there's probably an alternative solution.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. There's always alternative solutions, right? Most ESOP companies are larger than that, but most ESOP companies are the kinds of business where they have their name on the local high school football scoreboard. Right? They're deeply embedded in their communities. They're deeply embedded in their employees, and their employees mean a lot to them. So from a nuts and bolts standpoint, 15 to 25 employees has to be a US-based company, has to be a company that's profitable and sellable. So one of the things I do tell people is ESOP is not an escape hatch.
Yeah.
Our clients think that, oh, well, I can't sell to private equity. Let's look at ESOP. The truth of it is an ESOP transaction, your total return quite often exceeds what you would make if you sold to private equity or third party. So, man, it's not something where it's just, I can't sell my company. I'm going to sell to my employees.
Right. I'm failing. I need to get out of here. Here you go, employees. It's all yours.
Yep. Just throw it up in the air and before the plates hit the ground, you're gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
So going through this then, from a nuts and bolts standpoint, US-based 15 to 25 employees and successful and profitable, the balance sheet works. Functionally, for a company to really be a good ESOP is they have to have a management team that likes to communicate with, right? Because this is a company culture change for some companies.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure that you're willing to do the work. But there are benefits to doing the work. An ESOP company in the year after becomes an ESOP tends to see a 5 to 6% growth in productivity. ESOP companies tend to be 2.3 to 2.5% grow faster than non-ESOP companies. They tend to see a return of 2.4 to 2.6 more in the ROI, right? So ESOP companies financially are more successful than non-ESOP companies, but that takes work.
Yeah.
Right? So it's part of your culture. It has to be part of who you are. And it's a constant communication. It's a constant education, because when you first sell your company, right, the share price is very small. because of the debt that's on the books.
Yeah.
And it grows very quickly, but they need to understand that. They need to understand that this is a really unique, non-traditional benefit that they're getting that could mean millions for them in the long run. We hear stories all the time, right? Publix, the grocery chain in the Southeast of the US, is an ESOP company. And they tell stories all the time about cashiers and checkout workers that have been there for 20 years that are multimillionaires.
Yeah, that's interesting because I go to Publix and you see the difference when you go into Publix in the employees. I never realized it was an ESOP.
Yeah, absolutely. They're an ESOP company, and that's one of the big reasons they're so successful.
They're clearly trained to present themselves that way, but I can imagine that the incentive of being an ESOP certainly helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're talking about communication and culture. A firm that has the right culture for this and already has communication systems in place tends to be more successful with ESOPs. Is it a prerequisite that you have the right culture, or is it something that can be planned and shifted?
It's like anything else. Another example besides culture would be a transition plan, right? Do you have a management team in place? Do you have that next generation ready to take over? I would tell you the same thing. It's not required, but you have to want to. Right? You have to have a plan in place and be able to understand how you're going to get there. That's part of what we do for our clients, is help them get off on the right foot. We work with a number of people that help them build that culture if they don't have it specifically. But I would tell you that most ESOP companies really do take this and run with it. And it's different. It feels different. And you don't really appreciate it until you go to a conference of ESOP companies and start hearing them tell their stories about the different ways that they celebrate October as Employee Ownership Month.
Yeah.
Right. And the way they celebrate that month, or the way they celebrate the share price reveal every year, right? Because every year there's a valuation done in your company that the trustee then uses to determine the share price. So every year there's a big celebration around that share price when it comes up.
As long as it's going up.
Well, and most of the time it does, especially in the beginning as you're paying down that debt, it absolutely does. And hopefully over time, that's the trend that continues. We all know business has ups and downs, but if it's down, then everybody needs to understand why. That's the biggest thing I tell people. If you're building a culture, you don't have to have open books, but people need to know what's working in the company and what's not. And they need to know how they impact success.
Yeah.
If they don't know how they individually on a day-to-day basis can help the company be more successful, then they can't have the impact that you're looking for. And then you don't get the results that you really want.
Yeah.
So you have to be willing to have that conversation. But man, when it works, and it does, it's a lot of fun. You can go into an ESOP company, like you said, at Publix. You didn't even know, but now that you're thinking about it, you're going, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Based on their culture.
What about cost and timeline? What does it cost going into this in terms of administrative costs and planning costs? And how long does a process take from, oh, I think I want to do this, till it's all in place and it's starting to run in the way it's supposed to run?
Yeah. So let's talk about process. The step one is the I think I want to phase, right? And that's education. And that ends in that feasibility study. And a feasibility study at its core is a decision-making tool. You got to know how much money you're going to make, right? Because you got to win. You built this thing. You took the risk. You got to win as the seller. There's nothing wrong with that. Make your money. The company's got to be better off. If the company's not more profitable, not better off from being an ESOP, then what's the point? And the employees have to win too. You want to be able to see it. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the people that I talk to start with the employees. They want to know, how are my employees benefiting from this, even before they get into their own return?
Yeah.
So that's step one. Step one takes 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
Honestly, and truly, do you mind what the biggest bottleneck in step one is how fast can you get me your financials?
Right.
So we can do the analysis we need to do.
Architects can relate to that as well.
Yes, they can. Banker Matt can relate to that too. Oh, so you needed this closed in 3 weeks and I needed financials yesterday. Yep, I get it. Yeah. So step two then, if you go through and you do that feasibility study and the answer is yes, no, or maybe not right now. Right. And that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
I can tell you that people that go forward with the study, 80% of the time go forward with an ESOP. So then we transition into the I know I want to phase. And that's where we build it. That's where we put your team together with you, where we hire the trustee, for example. That's where we create the actual ESOP itself, which sounds crazy, but it's actually a pretty straightforward matrix that we work through with people to get the information that we need to make this work. And that's where we go through the negotiations process with the trustee. That process is a 4 to 6 month process for most companies.
Okay.
That process is a lot of fun, and that ends in the transaction closing. And then after that is the we are phase. So you think, I think I want to, I know I want to, We are an ESOP. And that's where you're building that culture. That's where you are working with, again, you have a team just like you do for your 401k that administers that 401k externally, your third-party administrator. That's where you're going through and seeing the success and the fruits of your labor. That's where you're kicking it off with your employees and celebrating. So one of the coolest moments of my entire career was being part of an actual kickoff at a company. And this was actually an engineering firm, by the way. So another professional services, architects, engineers, accountants, they're the number one category of ESOP companies, by the way. So far and away, number one. Number two is manufacturing. Number three is construction. Number four is financial services. Banks, for example. Actually, you may not know, a lot of your banks are minority ESOPs. So we're in the room. And the seller told us, dress to the nines, wear your best suit, serves his employees a meal. We get a meal too, but we're stuck in the corner. He's like, you guys sit over here. I'm going to interact with my team. At this point, we're like, okay, so we're just the jerks in the suits in the corner. Good. Okay. He gets up in front. And keep in mind, this guy's probably 6'8", weighs 300 pounds. Solid dude, beard down to here. And he's like, so I brought you all together today because I wanted to share something with you. I sold my company. I sold us, or this company. And the reason we're here today is because I want to introduce you to the new owners. So he tells everybody in the room, take out your phone. Now, of course, when he says, I want to introduce you to the new owners, 200 sets of eyes turn and look at the jerks in the corner wearing suits.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
With, we'll say, skepticism. We maybe not anger just yet.
They don't know the details yet. Yeah.
So he tells them, pull out your phones. And he has to hold up your phone. When everybody's got their phone, I want to see everybody's hands up. And he actually has a text that's sent to everybody at the same moment. And they all get it. And all the phones are going off in the room. And it says, the future owner of this company is you.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And at this point, he's up there. He's got tears running down his face. You know, big 6'8", 300-pound guy, snot bubbles. And he's like, yeah, so I just want to tell you guys, I sold the company to something called an employee stock ownership plan, an ESOP. You are now, all of you, going to be shareholders in this company. And to tell you guys what that means, I got these two guys over here who are going to walk you through it.
Very cool.
And one of the coolest, even now, I still get the hair on my arm standing up and the back of my neck. And
I love it.
It's a pretty powerful thing to see the employees go through that emotional transition too of a, wait, what? And then hear about it and get more excited as you go through that presentation and talk through what this means for them. It's pretty neat.
I can imagine that that's pretty exciting to be part of that. We're going to start wrapping up here, but I want to give you an opportunity for one to share anything that we haven't yet discussed.
I think we should talk about the benefits to the company for this.
All right.
Right. We've talked about how the sellers make just as much, if not more, selling to a third party,
yeah.
How they can pull liquidity out and how they win. We've talked about how the employees win and some of the cool stories about how that happens, but we haven't had that pullover moment yet. Right. So let's talk about how the company wins. I mentioned earlier that an ESOP, an employee stock ownership plan, is a qualified retirement plan under the same law, ERISA, established in 1974 here in the US. As your 401k. Well, if your company is an S corporation, for example, and it's 100% employee owned, because it is a qualified retirement plan, if you're an S corp and 100% employee owned, your company no longer pays federal taxes. Hmm. And in 46 out of 50 states, no longer pays state taxes.
Wow.
Think about that.
That is a big benefit.
Yep. Pause for effect, right? I want to stress that is proportional. So if you're 30% employee owned, you get 30% of the benefit. But essentially what happens is those K-1s that the shareholders used to get in S-Corp that used to go to the sellers now go to the ESOP and they don't have to pay the tax. Imagine what your company could do with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic opportunities.
Yeah. So I hope nobody swerved too hard.
Yeah. I'm glad we didn't miss that.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a big thing. And I think it's something you need to know. Everybody wins at an ESOP transaction if it's done well and done right.
Is there anything else that we need to discuss before we wrap things up?
No, I think that's great. I think everybody has a real sense of the process to become an ESOP, what an ESOP is, some of the challenges of ESOP we talked about with getting paid over time. We got to tell some cool stories along the way. I think if they want to learn more, then definitely just reach out to me and we can continue to have an education discussion.
All right. Sounds great. Before I ask you my final question,
please.
What are some of the biggest mistakes people make with ESOPs?
The biggest mistake people make with ESOPs, and I want to not get into like the mistakes that really hurt the company or anything like that, because that's a my mistake, right? If I set up an ESOP, and I never have, but yeah, I used to work for a company. The company I work for now is the company people contact to fix other people's mistakes, right? So the things that I see that I would be worried about is, you know, having your local attorney do it, and then they release all the shares, and suddenly you've got that liability.
Got it.
Right? Or not preparing for that repurchase obligation, right? Your trustee or your bank should be asking you 5 years down the road to do a study, very inexpensive, right? Just to start planning for what's going to happen 7, 10, 12, 15 years. So, yeah.
Final question. This is a question that I ask all my guests. You've been a business owner. You've advised business owners. So you're very well qualified for this question. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
One of the hardest lessons that I learned with my business, this is a great question, by the way. I love this. And I'm so glad that I had an answer that just popped up. One of the things that I learned very quickly with my own business that I very quickly also started teaching my clients is work with the clients you want, not just the ones you can get.
Yes. Good advice.
Have a plan for doing that. Understand who you want to work with, who you work with best, why you want to work with them. And more importantly, why working with them makes them better off too. How does everybody win in that conversation? Because, man, if I'm working with clients I want to work with, even now, if I'm excited about jumping on a weekly call with somebody for a short meeting just to make sure we're all on the same page and communicating, and I get up in the morning and don't even need a cup of coffee because I'm just ready to go do it, right? You stay excited about it. And life's too short to work with people that you don't want to work with. So figure out who those people are and go find more of them.
Great advice. Matt Middendorp is his name. The company is Vision Point Capital. And you can learn more at visionpointcapital.com. Also, before we got started here, you had also mentioned esopready.com. You want to talk a little bit about that, Matt?
Yeah, so esopready.com is a website that we just launched that allows you to go and gather this information that we talked about today. You can actually take an assessment on esopready.com. You can plug your company through it and just see how ESOP ready you are. It asks some basic questions, nothing in depth. So you don't have your last tax returns up or anything. You're good there. Just very straightforward. And it also allows you to schedule time with me. So you get direct access to my calendar at esopready.com to sit down and we can have this conversation.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you, Matt, for coming by here.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
And shedding light on ESOPs. This has been fantastic. I think this will be one of those episodes that we point to all the time.
Awesome.
Whenever this topic comes up, we'll say, go listen to this episode. It's all there. Matt Middendorp, thank you very much.
Thank you. And I think it's all a function of the great questions you asked, Mark. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that.
Talk to you soon.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. Throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an Entree Architect. with weekly live group business coaching. Yep, we have business coaching there. Monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, 2 a month. So 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30days. We'll give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember 3 words: love, learn, share. Have a great day. Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach. By becoming NCARB certified, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses. Learn more today at ncarb.org.